Welcome everyone to this week's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program on Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is going to explore both the RISE and the Forest Acts, both CCL supporting asks. We're going to be joined by Jamari Hartley and Hardy Olms, CCL's Government Affairs Coordinators, for a training that's going to review more policy details about both of these current CCL supporting asks. So let me introduce our wonderful speakers, just so you can get a little bit more information on both of them. Jamari Hartley works in our DC office as CCL's Government Affairs Coordinator. Jamari's work focuses on tracking and researching pertinent legislation, meeting with congressional offices and NGOs, and advocating for CCL's policy goals. And with him is the wonderful Hardy Olms, also serving as CCL's Government Affairs Coordinator in the DC office. His work focuses on managing the coalition of volunteers and partner organizations for carbon pricing advocacy efforts. Hardy also facilitates collaborative efforts between national organizations and CCL, which includes non-governmental and business entities. So you can see that we are in good hands with our two esteemed speakers this evening. So, Jamari, the floor is yours, and thank you all again for being here.
Thank you, Brett. And thank you everyone for tuning in this Thursday evening. Today, I'm going to be giving a legislative update on the Fostering Overseas Rule of Law and Environmentally Sound Trade, otherwise known as the Forest Act. It's currently a House and Senate sponsored supporting ask for CCL. In this training, I will hope to achieve goals to explore the outline and broad level mechanisms of the Forest Act, review the key elements behind how the Forest Act is designed, and highlight CCL's interpretation of this policy that protects tropical forests. The bill numbers for this section are S2950 and HR5508. Senator Brian Schatz, Representative Earl Blumenauer, and Representative Brian Fitzpatrick have introduced companion bills in the Senate and House that will require importers of high-risk agriculture commodities and products to analyze supply chains and show evidence that their imports are not contributing to illegal deforestation. The Forest Act builds upon the Lacey Act to build a map on how other countries can directly address illegal deforestation. The bill's framework creates a standing advisory board composed of outside experts from NGOs, academia, labor, and industry for consultation and coordination for developing action plans. The bill creates an interagency working group to coordinate data sharing and implementation on the bill. The Forest Act not only increases efforts to protect and restore forests globally, but also to work closely with other governments and to reverse and eliminate illegal deforestation. Here's a list of updated list of co-sponsors for the Forest Act. Why is the Forest Act important? Illegal deforestation results in more than 2.7 gigatons of carbon dioxide equivalent per year, more than India's total annual fossil fuel emissions in 2018. Deforestation is responsible for nearly 15% of global greenhouse gas emissions, and the recent IPCC report makes it clear we must significantly reduce emissions within the next few years to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. Most deforestation globally is driven by agricultural expansion and commodity production, and 69% of this conversion of forests to commercial agriculture is conducted illegally in producer nations across the globe. What does the Forest Act cover? This bill will initially cover the agricultural commodities and products that are major drivers of deforestation: palm oil, soy, beef, leather, rubber, cocoa, and pulp and paper. Other commodities may be added in the future through a thorough inclusive assessment process. The Forest Act will be enforced by customs authority and will have real consequences and penalties for companies who don't comply. This bill sets a high bar for company due diligence and supply chain traceability, as importers from high-risk regions need to be able to document their full supply chain back to the production unit. It has the potential to become a game changer for how international commodity trade is conducted. What is the Lacey Act? The Lacey Act was passed in 1900 and was the first federal law that protected wildlife. It made it illegal to import, export, sell, acquire or purchase fish, wildlife, or plants that are taken, possessed, transported, or sold in violation of the U.S. or Indian law in interstate or foreign commerce involving fish, wildlife, or plants taken or sold in violation of state or federal law. In 2008, the Lacey Act was amended to protect wildlife. The Farm Bill was also amended in 2008 to extend provisions for wildlife to plants and plant products, such as paper and timber. How does the Forest Act affect trade? The Forest Act creates a risk-based framework for increasing transparency and reporting in companies' international supply chain. 1 year after the bill is enacted, importers must certify it. They have exercised reasonable care to ensure that goods were not produced from illegally deforested land. The Forest Act supports the rule of law and strengthens the position of those fighting for climate-friendly trade in the United States. In 2020, the United States imported processed cowhide and beef products valued at more than $500 million from Brazil. The Forest Act will focus only on goods that were produced from illegally deforested land in countries such as Brazil and Indonesia. America is a major importer of agricultural commodities that contribute to deforestation, greenhouse gases, and products containing these commodities. This bill would help eliminate the demand for high-risk commodities tied to illegal deforestation worldwide to impact global emissions significantly. This bill levels the playing field to ensure American farmers and ranchers do not have to compete against those who benefit unfairly from illegal deforestation. This bill helps American consumers know that their products do not contribute to illegal deforestation and associated biodiversity loss, human rights abuses, and crimes. Addressing climate change in order to prevent its worst effects on health and livelihoods is a human rights obligation. If illegal deforestation were a country, its greenhouse gas emissions would be equivalent to China's total, or to India's total fossil fuel emissions in 2018, third behind the United States and China. This bill will help eliminate a significant portion of these deforestation emissions, which account for 15% of global greenhouse gas emissions. This bill helps conserve existing forests, which can help contribute roughly a third of the greenhouse gas emission reductions to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. This bill puts the United States back at the forefront of efforts to address greenhouse gas emissions within international trade and agriculture. Over 40 United States environmental rights and anti-corruption organizations signed an open letter supporting the Forest Act, calling on Congress and the Biden-Harris administration to swiftly enact the proposed legislation, which they consider a critical step in tackling global deforestation and forest degradation, climate change and biodiversity loss, while promoting good governance and leveling the playing field for responsible businesses at home and abroad. What are other countries doing to stop illegal deforestation, and how will the Forest Act help? At the 2021 UN Climate Change Conference held in Glasgow, more than 120 countries, including the United States, pledged to curb and reverse deforestation by 2030 through the Glasgow Leaders' Declaration on Forest and Land Use, with 12 governments and private companies pledging a total of approximately $19 billion to address deforestation. And that wraps the details of the Forest Act. This bill presents a unique opportunity for U.S. leadership on reducing its global emissions footprint while protecting the world's tropical forests and reducing environmental crime. Feel free to look for the additional resources on CCL Community. Thank you, Brett, and thank you everyone for coming out tonight.
Thank you, Jamari. Yeah, let me put a link in the chat where everyone can find the supporting asks as well. This is a reminder that both the Forest and Rise Act one pagers, as well as just our general review of what a supporting ask is, and then the chat.
So here's an overview of the second half learning goals. I'd like to thank you all for taking time out of your evening for this. My name is Hardy Alms, and I'll be presenting on the Rise Act, which is one of our supporting asks. I'll begin by introducing and giving a brief overview of the RISE Act, what it is, and what problems it helps to solve, before shifting towards the three major elements of the bill, and finally opening things up for questions. It's a fairly complex piece of legislation, so hopefully you'll have a much better understanding of the RISE Act at the end of this than you did coming in. Before I get into the bill, I want to remind everyone that the RISE Act and Forest Act are two of our supporting asks. In the case of Senate Republicans, they act as our primary ask. So if you have a Republican senator, one of these bills should be your primary ask. We need them to move faster in the right direction on climate, and supporting these bills are one thing that we can do. So first things first, let's just get a general rundown of what the RISE Act is and what it does. The Reinvesting in Shoreline Economies and Ecosystems, or RISE Act, was introduced by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island, along with Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana in June of 2021. It establishes an offshore wind revenue sharing model, dedicates funding to the National Oceans and Coastal Security Fund, along with making reforms to the Gulf of Mexico Energy Security Act. So why do we need this? Now, the coastline of the United States is a highly populated area. From an EPA report, approximately 25 million people live in an area vulnerable to coastal flooding. Coastal and ocean activities, such as marine transportation of goods, offshore energy drilling, resource extraction, fish cultivation, recreation, and tourism, are integral to the nation's economy, generating 58% of the national gross domestic product. And coastal areas are also home to species and habitats that provide many benefits to society and natural ecosystems. Now, sea level rise, storm surge, increase in ocean temperatures, and acidification from climate change are harming coastal communities and will continue to do so to an increasing degree unless emissions are dramatically reduced. The RISE Act provides a measure of relief to these communities, and it does so by taking advantage of the revenues associated with offshore wind energy. So how are offshore wind revenues treated currently? Offshore wind energy is unique in the following sense. With respect to other forms of energy produced on federally controlled lands or waters, revenues are shared with adjacent states and conservation programs. Now, for a moment, I want to clear up what exactly I mean by revenues. So we're talking about things like operating fees, rentals, bonuses, royalties, and other payments. In the case of offshore wind, the entirety of such revenues are currently returned to the United States Treasury. The RISE Act would modify this and create a revenue sharing model for offshore wind energy revenue. Now, the first aspect of the RISE Act that we will discuss is its creation of a revenue sharing model for offshore wind energy. Offshore wind is a growing part of the US energy mix, according to a report written by a team of researchers in the US Department of Energy and its National Renewable Energy Lab. The offshore wind system in the US grew 24% in 2020 and 2021, with over 35,000 megawatts now in various stages of development. Increased industry interest, combined with the Biden administration's goal to deploy 30 gigawatts of offshore wind power by 2030, may propel the offshore wind industry into greater heights in the coming years. Alongside this national level goal, states are aiming to procure at least 39,298 megawatts of offshore wind capacity by 2040. Furthermore, governments, energy companies, and end users are increasingly looking at offshore wind as a power source to produce green hydrogen, which can be used in other sectors of the economy, like transportation, heating, industry, and grid storage as a zero emission fuel. So in essence, the future is bright for offshore wind. Now let's take a look at the offshore wind energy revenue sharing model that's established by the RISE Act. So revenues from offshore wind projects in federal waters would now be allocated in the following manner. 50% would be sent to adjacent states based on a formula developed by the Secretary of the Interior, inversely proportional to the distance from the wind farms. The minimum to be allocated to an eligible state for each fiscal year is at least 10% of the amount available. Now, 37.5% would be directed to the National Oceans and Coastal Security Fund. We will go further in depth on this point in the next section. And lastly, 12.5% would go to the Treasury. State revenues will be protected from sequestration. As an aside, I just want to define sequestration for you guys because it comes up a few more times in the context of the RISE Act. Sequestration refers to automatic spending cuts that can occur through the withdrawal of funding for certain, but not all, government programs. Protection from sequestration shields government programs from these sorts of cuts. So how can the funds be used by states? The states actually have a great deal of leeway and discretion in terms of how they can use money generated from offshore wind. Funds may be used for many activities, including coastal restoration, hurricane protection, or infrastructure improvements. Similarly, funding may be used to mitigate damage to fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. Finally, funds may be used for the implementation of federally approved marine, coastal, or comprehensive conservation management plans. And now we'll take a look at how the RISE Act dedicates funding to the National Oceans and Coastal Security Fund. The National Oceans and Coastal Security Fund was established to support activities intended to protect, conserve, restore our oceans, coasts, and Great Lakes. To achieve its purpose, it supports a nationally competitive grant program, as well as formula block grants to coastal states. The National Oceans and Coastal Security Fund does not currently have a dedicated source of funding, and the RISE Act would help to address this issue. So how would the RISE Act amend the National Oceans and Coastal Security Fund? It would direct additional revenue to the fund from the following sources. It would take 37.5% of offshore wind revenue, as we have previously discussed. It would also take 12.5% of the revenue from the Gulf of Mexico Energy Security Act. This act we will discuss in more detail in the following section. Now, the RISE Act also specifies how the funds shall be directed, with a maximum of 75% for formula grants to coastal states, a maximum of 20% for nationally competitive grants for oceans, coasts, and the Great Lakes, and a maximum of 5% for administrative expenses. Lastly, if $35 million or less is available for the fund in a fiscal year, then in that fiscal year, available dollars will only be available for national competitive grants. Now, the last major component of the RISE Act that we will be going over are its reforms to the Gulf of Mexico Energy Security Act, or GOMESA. The Gulf of Energy Security Act of 2006 provides significant revenue sharing in the Gulf of Mexico. Currently, the act shares leasing revenues with Gulf-producing states, namely Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, and Louisiana, and the Land and Water Conservation Fund for coastal restoration projects. It bans oil and gas leasing within 125 miles off the Florida coastline and mandates leasing of 8.3 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico. GOMESA funds are to be used for coastal conservation, restoration, and hurricane protection. Now let's take a look at how the RISE Act reforms GOMESA. It allows for more equitable resource sharing between the states and federal conservation programs. Specifically, the RISE Act would eliminate the GOMESA state revenue sharing cap, which is currently set at $375 million. It would increase the amount of GOMESA revenue shared with the states from 37.5% to 50%. The remainder of revenue goes to the Treasury at 25%, the National Oceans and Coastal Security Fund at 12.5%, and finally, the Land and Water Conservation Fund, also at 12.5%. It also makes oil and gas leases from 2000 through 2006 eligible for future GOMESA payments and protects GOMESA revenues from sequestration. Now, the RISE Act reform of GOMESA also impacts the Land and Water Conservation Fund. This is important for those of you in inland states, as this is the part of the bill that impacts them, as the Land and Water Conservation Fund is not specific to coastal states. It supports the preservation, development, and access to outdoor lands for public recreation. Traditionally, the Land and Water Conservation Fund has been funded from offshore oil and gas leases. Now, as previously mentioned, 12.5% of GOMESA revenues go to the Land and Water Conservation Fund. The RISE Act also lifts the Land and Water Conservation Fund's stateside funding cap of $125 million. The overall funding cap of $900 million remains. However, the fund could still receive less than that $900 million a year if its funding source does not result in enough revenues to meet those limits. So in effect, the removal of the state-sided cap makes it more likely that the Land and Water Conservation Fund is fully funded. And next, we'll move on to some additional resources and where to find them on community. This is mostly a review of what Jamari showed you. So this page on community provides resources and strategies regarding our secondary asks and how to bring them to your member of Congress, along with information pertaining to each one. So again, for those of you with Republican senators, either the RISE Act or Forest Act will be a primary ask, so keep that in mind. And of note, I'd refer you to the Making Supporting Asks PDF, as well as the RISE Act one pager. And furthermore, there will be shortly a one pager which describes a few of the acts that are mentioned in this presentation, which would be impacted by the RISE Act, specifically the Gulf of Mexico Energy Security Act, the National Ocean and Coastal Security Fund, and the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And that wraps up the details of the RISE Act. So in summary, this bill presents coastal communities with the opportunity to make use of their offshore wind assets to assist with coastal restoration and conservation projects, which are becoming increasingly needed due to climate change.
Thank you so much, Hardy, for that excellent review. This has just been such an in-depth and informative webinar tonight. We really appreciate the work that both you and Jamari put in to all of the research and providing us updates on these two supporting asks that CCL is really focused on helping get past the finish line right now. If you have any questions after tonight, here is a link on this slide to our forums on CCL community. It's really easy to get to. It's just cclusa.org/forums. We also have our supporting asks URL spelled out here. Please reach out, stay in touch, let us know the success you're having with your member of Congress. We hope you found tonight's training useful and empowering, and we look forward to seeing you soon. Stay safe, everyone.
Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye,
everybody. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.